People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan. This is a Skype call out to Fort Worth, Texas. And I got guitar Frenchie here with me, man. How you doing?
I'm great, Alan. Glad to
All
have
right, do you want to go by Kevin? I should have asked.
Well, you should go by Frenchie, but guitar Frenchie is fine. Kevin is fine. I got many names. But no, I've been going by Frenchie for a long time, you know.
All right, well, Frenchie it is. Man, I've just been following your social media for about a month or two now, and you've just been tearing it up.
Busy as can be. Yeah.
And that's really good for late November, December, as we approach the holiday season.
It's the first, this month in December, I have 15 shows, and that's a lot for being December, for being around the holidays. So I've been enjoying it. I've been happy to be working and, you know, finishing 2021 on the right note, and got an album coming out on the 15th also. So just a little awesome. 5-song EP, little acoustic thing, very bluesy. So yeah, I just decided to finish the year like on a big.
That's one thing I've really appreciated, and we'll get into it. I want to go ahead and plug the albums that you have out now, and go ahead and plug your website, and then we'll plug it again at the end. So if you can tell us a little bit how people can find you on social media or your website.
Yeah, so all my social media is Guitar Frenchie, so Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. I do daily guitar videos on it, so that's all at Guitar Frenchie. And for the website, with an easy link to all the albums and tour dates, you'll go to bluesdestroyers.com. Bluesdestroyers.com.
Right on.
It's pretty easy.
I just want to start from square one with you is, man, growing up, where'd you grow up at?
So I grew up in a town called Nîmes, N-I-M-E-S, and that's in the south of France. And I spent 19 years there from the time I was born and raised in my turbulent teenage years. And eventually I left France for England first, spent about a year in London. And when I was 20, shy of 21, I moved to the United States and I moved to Los Angeles, California. And that was 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been been quite the ride.
And so, I mean, what brought you to the States? Was it music, or like when you were growing up, I mean, what were you into in France?
So my folks, they are motorcycle riders, big fans of rock and roll. So I grew up on everything American at home. And then you turn on the television and it's TV series, movies. So every kind of reference that I had was always American. You know, I grew up like watching Dukes of Hazzard when I was a kid on TV and all that. And so I guess the propaganda worked really well on this little French guy, because I thought of everything that was cool was American. Cars, girls, rock and roll, the motorcycles, the open roads. And I always dreamed to, but you can see I got my American flag behind me. I just fell in love early on with the American culture, and so I was just very curious to see what it was about. Now, where do you go? You could go to New York. It's New York. It's not Alabama or Texas, or you go to California, kind of the same deal. So I wanted to go either to Tennessee or Texas. So it was either Nashville or Dallas. But in my young mind, I was actually kind of clever because I thought, man, if I go to Tennessee or Texas, it's going to be so particular. And, you know, I don't come from money, so I didn't have like a trust fund, so I can rent a place, nothing. I was backpacking, you know, guitar in the backpack. I thought it's going to be culturally so intense that I might not be able to make it work right away. So I thought if you go to Los Angeles, I knew this was the place where everybody come from somewhere when you're in L.A. So if you say, well, I'm from France, nobody's going to, you know, bat an eye. They'd be like, oh, that's cool. And so I decided to move to L.A. And I was staying in cheap hotels. And then I started to make my rounds and figure the whole thing out pretty quick. That was 20 years ago. And
That's a great point, man. Anytime I get to talking about anyone, you know, from out of the United States, it's usually Los Angeles. It's usually New York City. Because it's that, where are you going to go? You're going to go where everything is.
Yes.
And so when you were 20 years old, like something really cool happened. You had a Mr. Jennings just playing in the living room. Is that right?
So 3 weeks after landing in the States in L.A., I was at some after party and I was jamming with a band. So I was answering ads and trying to find a gig. And I was playing with this guy named Joe Firstman. He was from North Carolina, but had migrated to California. And I was playing with him, and this guy comes up to me. His name is Lex. He's a dear friend of mine. He comes up to me. It's like 2 or 3 in the morning on a Saturday night. It was a rehearsal space. I don't know the name of it, but it was at the corner of Hollywood and Vine where the Capitol Records building is. And comes up to me, and he asks me, he goes, man, you played pretty good tonight. I said, oh, cool. And, you know, I had broken English back then. I still got the accent, but I do a little better now. He goes, have you ever heard of Waylon Jennings? And I said, I don't know. So he looks at me a little weird, and he goes, you heard of Dukes of Hazzard? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. So he's like, come on, man. He goes, and he starts singing, just a good old boy. I said, yeah, of course. And obviously we had, you know, a different title back in France for Dukes of Hazzard. It was called Sheriff Fais-moi Peur. So I was like, yes, of course. And he goes, well, I'm playing with his son, Shooter, and we have a rock and roll band called Stargun. And our guitar player is quitting the band, and we need a guitar player. So right there and then I was sold. So he calls up Shooter. It's 3 in the morning. Shooter shows up with his girl, and we've been around town partying. So we all go to their rehearsal space, Stargun's rehearsal space, and we started playing. Shooter grabbed the bass, Lex on drums, and I just started playing. And so just kind of play a little something, and Lex is looking at me. He goes, dude, come on, play like you did earlier. You know, I was like, oh, shred. I said, okay. So I went for it, played for a little while. Shooter stops. He goes, where are you staying? So I said, I'm staying right down the road at some hotel on Hollywood Boulevard, hostel. And he goes, no, you're not. You're coming back with us tonight. You got the gig. I said, all right. I was game. So when he picked up my backpack at the hostel, and when he crashed at the band house, and then the next day I got introduced to the rest of the band members, and I was the new guitar player for Stargun. And so when that happened, I told Shooter, I said, look, I said, I'm not from here, obviously, and I need to get paperwork. I need to get a work visa if I'm going to play in the band. I'm not going to play with immigration. And he goes, well, let me call my parents and we'll figure it out. So he called his parents, which is Waylon Jennings and Jesse Coulter, country royalty. And they were like, well, that sounds great. Will you kids come and spend the weekend at our house in, you know, in Chandler, Arizona? And that way we can meet him and see how it goes. And then we'll figure it out how to work his papers. So we went over and I met Waylon and Jesse, and we had a great weekend. There was family members there. And so it was a pretty packed house. So I took the couch. And so on a Saturday night, me and Shooter and some of the guys in the band, we went out to the bars and proceeded to get really drunk. So we come home late. Obviously, Waylon and Jesse stayed home. They were not going to go out and party. And so I crashed on the couch, and early Sunday morning, I'm just hungover as can be. And I smell food cooking and, you know, breakfast with bacon and all that good stuff. And but then I start hearing music and my head is pounding. I'm like, oh, this is bad. This is terrible. So I look up from under the covers and I look up and I see Waylon and Jesse sitting at the piano playing to each other. Uh-huh. And that was a magical moment. I just sat there and just enjoyed the show. And then everybody got out of their rooms, respective rooms, and we all went on over to the kitchen table and had a nice breakfast with everybody. And I knew it was a special moment. And I also knew that this was the beginning of my American life. Definitely career, but also American life, to be introduced to the country with such oil legends and you know, part of the Americana culture. And so
yeah, what a way to be just introduced to one of the kings of outlaw country.
Yeah.
And just from getting familiar with your music is I've spent quite a bit of time with the album Praise.
Oh yeah.
And it's very bluesy, but you kind of stamp Texas on it, in my opinion. It's got like an outlaw about it, you know?
Yeah, because, well, I grew up on strictly rock and roll pretty much, and a lot of blues, of course. But when I came to the States and I got introduced to Waylon, and Shooter kind of gave me an education in what to listen. So he gave me a bunch of Hank Jr. and George Jones, of course, all the Waylon stuff. And I was, at a time of my life, 20 years old, 21. I'd been playing since I was 12. But I had played in the south of France, a little bit in England, but I wasn't very that experienced. So I was still kind of forming my style, even though it was very blues-based. So by meeting Waylon in person and then getting introduced, because I did meet Chris Christopherson and play with him a little bit. I played with, you know, later on with Billy Joe Shaver. I jammed with Hank Jr. before. So I got really, like, completely absorbed into that realm of music, the outlaw country and the real old school country music. And I found something of interest musically for me because they all sound very bluesy. Some Willie Nelson recordings or Merle Haggard's picking, it's all blues stuff. It's just played with a twang and then same thing in the voice. Hank Jr.'s got a really interesting voice. Some of the stuff is very bluesy. And so I felt at home in this new genre that I was discovering in my early 20s. And then after I played with Shooter for a couple of years, now we had a hard rock band. We were like all about Guns N' Roses and AC/DC and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But after playing with Shooter, that's when I moved to Texas for the first time, because I moved in and out of Texas a couple of different times over the past 2 decades. But I just came to Texas and played with some friends that I met on the road because I just felt that Texas was the place for me to be. You know, LA was a great place to start, but I'm from a medium-sized town in the south of France, kind of looked like Texas in the sense, you know, I could go to Alabama and feel right at home. I just like, you know, slow pace, just, you know, LA was fun. I love going to LA if I go spend a couple of days. I love going to New York if I spend a couple of days, knowing that I will go home. You know, if you told me tomorrow you got to live in New York for a year, I'd be like, I'm not doing it.
You know. Right. Yeah, so. It's... Man, there's something about that, you know, that kind of small to medium-sized town, and I believe you're absolutely right. Just time seems to just slow down, almost stand still, and you're not so inundated by, like, all these different sensories that are constantly going off. Just
stuck in traffic all the time. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but just back to France, like, earliest interest that got you in the music was it mom and dad with the record player, or did they put you into music like you're going to be a classically trained guitarist, or how did that look?
No, they just love music and everything that had to do with music. So it could be, they still have, their living room looks like a rock and roll museum. They got like little figurines of the Rolling Stones, and it's box sets everywhere, guitars on the wall. So I kind of grew up around that. They never pushed me to pick up a guitar. For my 7th birthday, they bought me a record player and a cheap one. You know, nothing. I think the brand was called Sharp, S-H-A-R-P, Sharp. It was like a plastic turntable. And so we went to the store and bought it for me, and they said, well, do you want a record to go with it? And I asked for Eric Burdon and the Animals, the Best of the Animals LP. And I would play that thing all day long. And it's of course, all American music sung by English folks, you know, but it was The House of Rising Sun and Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood and all the songs. And so I just started having my own little world in my own room. I was able to now switch from the living room to my room with my records. And so whenever I asked for a record, my dad was trying to find me a copy. Obviously, there were some records that were a little rare, so my dad was not going to let me have a $200 vinyl and give it to a 7-year-old to scratch it all up, right? Because he did have a really big record collection. I'm talking about a couple thousand records. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. So I already had an education by listening to what my dad was listening to, and then I just started collecting my own little records as well. And so by the time I was 12, what happened was as I was listening to the same records, out of the blue, it's too long ago now, but what I remember, out of the blue, I started picking the guitar parts out of the songs. Like my ear was drawn to the guitar, whereas before it was just the songs. And then around 11, 12, the guitar just started, you know, tickling my ear, That's when I just started getting interested, and eventually I told my dad. So Jeff Beck was the guy that was really motivating me. It's Jeff Beck with the Yardbirds, Jeff Beck Group, BBA. So they had a song called Black at Moon that I covered on Praise, first song on Praise. It's a Dunnick mm-hmm. song. And he had a live version that was like 9 minutes long, and he used a talk box, and he did some crazy things on the guitar. So when you 10, 11 years old, listening to a 9-minute song, it's a lot. You don't have the attention span. So I remember I listened to it for like a minute or two, then I'll stop. And then one day, without paying attention, I had listened to the entire song. And when the song was over, I just kind of shook my head and said, I get it. I get the guitar. I understand the guitar. And so I went to my parents and said, I want to learn how to play the guitar. And they got me a guitar. Got me like a cheap Stratocaster copy. And they said, we'll buy you a guitar. You better learn it. And I said, I will. And they got me a book. It was called 15 minutes a day to learn how to play the guitar. So they told me, they said just do 15 minutes, and when you're done with your 15 minutes, you can go ride your bike, go hang out with your friends. So that's a pretty good deal. But as soon as I learned A minor, C, D major, right there was The House of the Rising Sun. I heard it in the course I was learning. I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then another 100 songs had those chords in. So 15 minutes turned into an hour, turned into eventually when I was like, you know, 15, 16, I would do 10 hours a day to the point where I skipped school completely to just go practice guitar. And that was no, yeah. It was no going back. So they can't complain.
You know, yeah, no kidding. The story kind of reminds me of Van Halen. Is, you know, after he was just listening to these records and he's self-taught and he learns, it got to a point to where he would just put a record on. And, you know, he would just play along with that record note for note. Yeah. And it got to a point for him to where when he was around other musicians, everyone thought that he read music, but he never would blow his cover. You know, he's like, he sits sheet music in front of me. I don't know what to do.
It's all by ear.
Yeah. And he was like, just let me hear it and I'll be able to emulate it. And that very cool. So just back to the United States now. So you and Shooter, y'all were in a hard rock and roll band for a time. Yeah. And what comes after that?
So what comes after that? So with Shooter, we did a little U.S. tour in Southwest. We went through Arizona, Texas, or we're in New Orleans and back. And so when we came to Texas, we met a lot of the Texas artists. And, you know, being the son of Waylon, people showed up. So I met a lot of cool people, and I loved Texas. I thought it was, like, the best time. And so when we got back to L.A. and eventually, like, about a year and a half later, the band broke up. I was left with a choice because my whole world had been Stargun from, like, the get-go. So now everything crumbled. What am I going to do? Do you go home back to France and tell your kids later on, hey, I used to have a band in L.A.? And I'd be like, no, you didn't, Dad. But it was either going back to France or trying to find an avenue to survive, because what really happened early on during those formative years with Stargun, what I realized is music was my means of communication and make a living, but I had fallen in love with the United States, with America, with the road. So I was going to find a way, no matter what, to stay, because I wanted to keep experiencing what I had just kind of had a taste for. Mm-hmm. So I made some phone calls, and I ended up getting a temporary gig with a guy named Wade Bowen, who's a Texas artist from Waco. And he was getting started. He got out of the college circuit. You know, a lot of Texas bands formed in college, and then some of them went on to have a career. And Wade was kind of in the same boat. He had gone to Texas Tech in Lubbock. And a lot of music comes from Lubbock, you know, all the way back to Buddy Holly. And he offered me to come out and hit the road with his band, because, you know, I was a little more professional than the band he had at the time. He said, if you come in, you know, you'll help everybody out and see what's going on. And as soon as I started playing with Wade, what I didn't realize is that I already had a reputation by doing that one tour with Shooter. So as soon as I got to Texas, I met all the bigger artists, you know. Wade was up and coming, but I would go and jam with guys like Cross Canadian Ragweed.
I was going to ask you about Cody Canada.
Yeah, I know Cody well.
Man, I grew up, a lot of my teenage years was riding red dirt roads in Blair and Cross Canadian Ragweed.
That's awesome.
And like, yeah, and so, you know, right when I was reading your bio and like prepping for this, is I've got to ask him if he knows Cody Canada, because they were in the same exact circuits.
Yeah. Yeah, hang out with...
That's cool, man. So, yeah, man, awesome. give me a cool Cody Canada story.
I'll tell you a funny story. So one night, Ragweed was playing with a guy named Pat Green, and they were playing in Dallas at some amphitheater. It was about 5,000-6,000 people. And I was off that weekend, so I went out and hang out. And I would go out. Yeah. I would go up on stage with Ragweed every time we opened up for them, and I would get on stage for like a couple of songs at the end of the set. And so we're backstage, and I hadn't played for a crowd of thousands of people yet. I was just playing clubs and bars and dives and all that stuff, right? So I'm like, wow, this is going to be cool and crazy. And so Cody comes up to me backstage before the show, and he goes, hey, here's your set list. I don't care if it's a set list. I thought I would just hang out, drink my wine, and then call me up on stage, just walk in, like, hey, you know, just play a couple songs. He goes, I said, a set list? He goes, well, yeah, do you think you're just going to sit your ass in the chair the whole entire show? You coming up on stage with us, you know, right now. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, okay, all right. And I walk on stage with them, and I knew the songs, but I never really played all of them songs. So I just kind of, you know, improvised. And it was 6,000 people, and I never played in front of 6,000 people. And next thing you know, like, Cody's like, come on, take it, you know, do your thing. I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm in front of the stage doing my thing. And next thing you know, I feel something, and I'm being lifted up. Like, what the fuck? And I look down, it's Cody's head in between my legs, and he had gone underneath me and grabbed me and put me on his shoulders. I'm Malcolm Young from AC/DC, and I'm like rocking my guitar solo on top of Cody's shoulders in front of 6,000 people. The entire place went crazy. And so that was a cool story, but that shows you how, you know, the kind of guy Cody and the kind of guys they were, as far as being really cool and supportive. And that's something that I found in Texas. It's just like this community of people that are very supportive of each other. And I know there's a lot of places like that, but in Texas, I really appreciated, you know, this this sense of community. There's another guy named Stoney LaRue. I don't know if you ever heard of Stoney. Stoney LaRue is same era as Ragweed, and he's one of the best singers, very soulful, can play guitar like nobody else. And I don't know, I just felt at home in Texas, and that's been it. And I lived in Nashville for years, too. But I was playing every weekend. I was playing in Texas. So I would be flying in, or I'd be on tour bus. And, you know, I played with a guy named Jack Ingram for many years. And so I've been around, and no matter what I've done, I lived in Oklahoma for a couple of years, but I will always come back to Texas. So at this point in my life, I'm just going to stay in Texas. If I go somewhere else for business, right, that's fine, but I will always come back to Texas.
I hear you. So right now you're stationed in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, right?
Yeah, I'm Fort Worth, but yeah, it's the DFW Metroplex.
Right on. And so, just to walk it up to, 2020, 2021, and I mean, just since we've been friends on social media and I'm following you, is, man, you've had a lot of cool opportunities just here lately with pursuing your own music.
Yeah.
Man, tell me about some of how that really came to be for Frenchie's Blues Destroyers, right?
Okay, so it's a cool story too. So it's a duo. It's me and Brother Pete, the drummer. And Brother Pete's been playing drums for Jack for 27 years. And so when I joined the band in 2007 with Jack, Pete and I, we became really good friends. I mean, we're all friends. I'm, you know, consider Jack family also. But after a few years, I started enjoying seeing Jack and Jack's process with songwriting and the Nashville business. And I lived in Nashville for a few years, and I met a lot of talented people. And I started paying attention, less attention to the guitar picking itself for itself, but how to go around writing a song and lyrics. I started getting interested in lyrics. My English got better. I started reading books. And by seeing other people writing around me, I just got the bug. And I naturally just started, every time I picked up a guitar, instead of just, you know, practicing or playing guitar, so I just kind of mess around, see what would come out of it. And I kind of found myself early on, like when I started doing it, having a thing for it, like at least felt like I had a few things to say. So I started writing around 2009-2010. I did a couple of demos in Nashville, but I never played a live show, and there's a couple of reasons why. Because you can put me in front of 10,000 people on stage with a guitar with a singer, walk in the park. But if you have to put me in front of a microphone, sure, in front of 20 people, I'd freeze. In my head, I'm not a singer. I would never sing background harmonies, you know, but I didn't see myself singing. And also, playing guitar for years, I had the muscle memory for the guitar. But remembering lyrics, even your own lyrics, is a different kind of memory. And a couple of years, I just kept writing and collecting songs, and once in a while do like a songwriter's showcase and play a couple of songs here and there. But I just didn't really care about playing. I just care more about writing. I had my, you know, artist gig with Jack. So it's just like, you know, it'll be what it is. Then one day, Brother Pete goes, he goes, "Hey, man, now have you thought about starting to go out and play your songs?" And I'm like, mm-mm, I'm not doing it. He goes, "Come on, man. You got it. It'll be fun. How about we do a show together in Dallas? We'll just play for an hour or so." And I was like, "Oh, okay." You know, didn't want to look like chicken shit. So I said yes, but I was just like, "Oh, but Jesus, it's going to be a disaster." So we played this place called Ader's Saloon. It's in the old Deep Ellum, historic place in Dallas. And they have, you know, bar after bar after bar. And it's like 3-4 streets. You know, it's just crazy. It's awesome. Big blues history there in Deep Ellum also. And we played a show at this place called Ader's Saloon. And nobody threw beers at me. I got a couple of compliments at the end. I didn't mess up my lyrics. And I actually had a good time. And I was like, well, all right. So we had a show in Fort Worth the next night, a place called Magnolia Mall Lounge. It's like a badass club here in Fort Worth. And same thing happened. It went well. People enjoyed it. And then I caught the bug. I'm like, all right, give me a microphone, man. That's it. We're going for it. And so that's how we started Blues Destroyers. But that was 8-9 years ago now. And I was still back in Nashville. Pete was in Texas. We're touring with Jack. So we didn't really play many shows. And once in a great while, we'll just find time. We're in the same city at the same time to just go and play a show somewhere. So it's not really until 2016, 17 that we really got to work, to be working, when I moved to Fort Worth from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Zigzagging on the map here. But so once I was around, that's when we started booking shows. And we played, I mean, we played all the time. And next thing you know, I had all these songs, and we found a producer. We went and did Love is Blood and Praise. And we toured extensively behind it. We went, you know, we ventured out outside of Texas. We go to Louisiana and Mississippi a lot. I love going to Mississippi. I go to Clarksdale. I've always enjoyed that.
I was going to bring it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the blues now. So I knew you had to make your way to at least Clarksdale. Man, you got to come to Bentonia and hang out. You'll probably play at the Blue Front Cafe, especially if old Jimmy Duck Holmes gets to hearing you play.
I haven't gone to Blue Front Cafe yet. Yeah.
I'm telling you, the first time I ever went there, I went to go meet Jimmy. I wanted to have him on the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's a mission that I'm on now, is to capture all these old blues cats and to make sure that everything that they did on the guitar and in their life is captured. So anyone like you or me who looks back, who is into the blues, can kind of get an idea of who they were.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, like, I've been spending time with these guys, and so I've got some trips to Clarksdale coming up. But
well, how far are you from
that area? There's just something about Mississippi, right?
There's something about Mississippi. Yeah, it's not for everyone. I got to tell you, because there is something in the air. It's pretty heavy. You go to some, at least from Texas through Louisiana, you go to some small towns. I mean, it's. You know, there's a, I don't know the name of the place. There's nobody there. There's like a couple hundred people, but it's like a little gas station corner store. And, you know, the old timers, they're sitting inside at the little tables, you know, slash a little cafe. And then the cemetery is right behind the gas station. It's like, whoa. You know, yeah. You just kind of, and they just, you walk in and just look at you because they see someone driving through. They know you're not from around those parts. And
yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story about Clarksdale. So I had moved out of Nashville for a girl, and I moved to Oklahoma City, and I was there for 2 years. And we eventually separated, and I came down to Fort Worth, but I was just feeling blue. I wasn't doing too great about the breakup. And it's like, well, why don't you just drive down to Clarksdale and spend a couple of days and just, you know, see something different. And I had always wanted to go. So I go there and I booked a room at the place called the Shack Up Inn. And Shack Up Inn is,
I was gonna bring it up.
Oh, you really? That's awesome. So Shack Up Inn, right? So you've been there?
I have not been there personally, but I have a lot of stories collected from there. A very special place in Clarksdale.
Yeah, so it's an old plantation, and they turn shotgun houses into little hotels, and it's really beautiful silos. They turn them into rooms. And so It was super cheap, you know. I mean, it was like $70 a night, you know, for being there. It's great. And so I booked
a lot of history.
So I booked 3 nights there. And then I look at the website, and I see that they have concerts there at the Shack of Pin. They have an actual stage and everything. So I contacted them. I said, hey, I'm so-and-so, you know, in Texas doing this and that. You know, I told them I was a professional musician. And I said, well, I'm going to be in town and I reserve rooms with you guys. And maybe I can play when I'm there. And they got back to me. They said, well, to tell you what, we can't really pay you, but if you play, and they gave me a night, they said, if you play, we'll give you one free night and breakfast. I said, deal. So I go there and I get settled. And So I played the second night. That's why I played the second night. Because I went around town and I went to all the shops and everything. And I went to see a guy named Dick Harp. Monica plays left-handed.
I know Deke Harp.
You do? Okay.
Deke is a friend of mine.
That's awesome. What a small world. I love that. Ah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So I go and visit him.
Yeah, when you
get to
talking about the blues world in Mississippi, there's going to be some names that you and I have a lot in common with.
That's awesome. I love it. Yeah, Deke is so sweet, man. And I introduced myself, and I told him I was a fellow left-handed guitar player. And he goes, oh, really? Just play my guitar. So I picked up his guitar, and I played a couple of things. And he goes, oh, cool. And what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, not much. He goes, well, I'm playing at Ground Zero Blues Club. Come and sit in. And I said, cool. I said, well, I'm playing Happy Hour at Shakopin. And after that, I'll go and come and play with you. He goes, cool. So the next night, I play at Shakopin. And it's a bunch of tourists, a bunch of Europeans. And they all came out to see me. And then there was a shuttle that was taking all of them to Ground Zero to go see Deke. So they see me play. I make $250 in tips. That's a free night. I drove myself. I didn't ride the shuttle. I drove myself, which maybe was not such a good idea afterwards. No, just kidding. But it's one straight line. But then so I go back there. And so all these tourists that came out to see Deke, next thing you know, they see the French guy they just saw play at Shakopin get up on stage and end up playing the entire night with Deke. And we had a great time. And then I met other people. Stan Street. I don't know if you're familiar with Stan Street. He owns Hambone Gallery in Clarksdale. And he became a really dear friend of mine. And so we ended up playing the Juke Joint Festival with Pete, because the next time I brought Pete with me, brother Pete, and we played Blues Destroyer shows. And a friend of ours, TK, she's a booking agent, and she's very well known in the blues world. And she ended up booking us some shows kind of different cities. And, you know, so we had kind of a little bit of an adventure in Mississippi, but since COVID, we haven't gone back. So...
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm going to come back because everybody's just kind of scared over there about everything. So, but other than that,
it's been quite a turnaround in Mississippi. I know Clarksdale is beginning to pick back up. Bentonia, they were real careful for a time, but they just did a show last Friday. Now, I believe, especially in those blues areas, is you got so many of these old cats, and they do need to be careful with this.
They sure are.
Yeah. So, I believe it. I believe it's time to begin moving again in that regard. So, man, tell me, we kind of just blew right through Nashville. You learned anybody? Tell me something about Nashville that kind of stuck with you.
Well, so the first time I went to Nashville was after Waylon passed away. We flew to Nashville to play for Shooter's dad's memorial, so for Waylon's memorial at the Ryman. So the first time I went to Nashville...
You played the Ryman?
I played it twice since, but I played my first time in Nashville was to go play the Ryman, and we were on the same bill, so it was Stargun, but it was his dad's band. Hank Jr., Kid Rock, Chris Christopherson, Ragweed was there. We invited them to play. And I met some really cool cats. I met Emmylou Harris that night. I met James Burton, who gave me compliments on my guitar playing. And we were down on Broadway and went from bar to bar. So I had a pretty nice taste of Nashville because of the Waylon connection. And so when I moved to Texas for the second time in 2007, early 2007, and I got the gig with Jack Ingram, Jack's label was based out of Nashville, and the bus was based out of Nashville. So often we will fly and meet the bus somewhere because we're like on big tours, you know, across the United States. And I was staying with the tour manager. I didn't have a place or nothing. And then tour manager goes, hey, man, so when are you going to get a place? And I was like, I didn't think about it. I don't know. I sleep on the tour bus. It's like, nah, you can't really do that. You know, we're going to eventually be around holidays. It's going to slow down. You got to find a place. And then I don't know why. I just said, is it possible for me to live in Nashville and still be in a band? Because everybody else was in Texas. And he goes, yeah, that's fine. Be wherever you want. So I got a place in Nashville. And I still had the Waylon connection. And because Jack was doing pretty good in Nashville with the business at the time, I also kind of had my foot in the door. Like I didn't have to go play on Broadway 4 hours a night in the cover band to get noticed before we knew who I was. So I was lucky in that sense that I was just already in the business. And I stayed for 8 years. I did. And played with some cool cats. I met some really cool people. And I just learned a lot. I really love the city. I just had to leave eventually just because I think, well, because I think it's kind of the troubadour lifestyle. You know, you don't really stay somewhere too long. And that was the longest city I lived in, still to today. But then Nashville became something else. And I don't talk down on it because I think it's great, but it's just got to be too much. And it goes back, I think, to my roots of coming from a smaller pace town. And I just, you know, everybody, next thing you know, you turn around and it's all these young kids. They all, there's not a bruise or scratch on them, you know, clean clothes, designer clothes, and fancy $3,000 guitars, but they write songs. I don't know what they're writing about because they don't look like they have lived life yet, you know. And, you know, because of my bringing, especially in America, with, you know, being a big fan of Billy Joe Shaver and all those cats, it just seemed to me that it was turning into something else. And this, not really true in general, but at least in my experience, it was. And I just kind of wanted to get out of there. I thought it was time to just kind of see other places. And but overall, it was a great experience because, like I said, I did a lot. But who knows? Yeah, maybe
absolutely.
I shot myself in the foot.
man, like when you call back home, friends you grew up with, or you know, family members, is man, just like what is that like when you're describing like what you're doing? I mean, does that how does that click with them?
Well, so what's interesting about this is when I left home, when I left France, I just kind of lost touch with a lot of my high school friends. And few people, when I said I'm going to go to LA and I'm going to make a career in music, well, a lot of people thought, who do you think you are? I said, I don't think I'm anybody, but I'm going to go and do something. You know, I'm not going to stick around here.
Mm-hmm.
Sticking around in the piece of ground in your hometown, right? Pink Floyd, the piece of ground in your hometown. So it's kind of the concept. It's just like, it doesn't matter if I fail or not, or if I succeed. Just the fact that I'm going to try is a success in itself. So if I come home because nothing happened, at least I tried. That was kind of the concept. So the first 2 years, I will go home eventually, like, you know, maybe try it once a year for Christmas or something, once I got my visas and all that. But the people see you, they don't, they're like, he's back. You know, someone will tell my dad, hey, I saw your kid the other day. And he goes, oh, you did? Well, if you see him, tell him to come inside to his parents. We haven't seen him in 10 months. Like, people thought they saw me in my hometown, whereas I was here doing music, right? So I think a lot of people didn't understand that I was here to stay already, even in within 2 or 3 years of my American experience. I was here to stay. I was going to do anything that I can, my power to stay. So eventually, I think by the time, you know, 10 years into it, they kind of realized, I don't think he's coming back. It's been 10 years. And I wasn't keeping in touch with anybody via phone or whatever, or email. But eventually when Facebook came around, that's when, you know, I kind of reconnected with everybody. And then I stopped Facebook for a while. And then, like, last year, I reopened the Facebook page because I kind of noticed I needed that anyway, because you need to for business. And so I reconnected with all of my old friends. And a lot of them have sent me messages of support and say, man, we were, like, super proud of you, what you did. And it's, like, such an inspiring thing to see you still there and thriving and playing. And it feels good because it felt that when I left, they were looking at me like, you know, that's not going to happen. But 20 years later, you get all my old friends to, and I love being in touch with them. I think it's a really cool thing, you know, and some of them are actually very talented musicians. And they never stopped playing. They just never left.
That's
just, yeah. But that happens here anyway. You know, people from small town USA never leave, never go to LA or New York or Nashville or whatever. Things a little easier now because we have the internet, so the world is smaller, so it's not as crazy of a concept to go to the big city. It really is not, you know. Whether or not you stay, that's a different story.
But, I've got three more questions, and okay, I'm walking on out the door.
I hope we're doing good so far, right?
Hey, I think we're doing a fine job, man. I'd love to have you on again sometime.
Oh, for sure.
I just wanted to respect your time. I'd like to keep it around an hour.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But just for listeners, young people, or maybe these are parents who have kids who are into music. You kind of already covered it, but what advice would you give to young guitarists or maybe someone in their 30s who wants to get into music? You kind of laid that out already, but what do you say about the commitment to the craft?
From personal experience, well, when you start, you got to start for fun. You got to do it for the right reasons, which is because it feels good to play guitar. I mean, I've been playing for 30 years. I just grab it randomly just to play it. Even if I'm busy, I'll grab it for 5 minutes and then be like, oh, hello, guitar, and then put it down and then go on with my day. It's just something that you do, the second nature. And for songwriting, it's kind of the same thing. I think it's like if you have things to say or if you have an affinity for words and you just have melodies in your head and you kind of have a poetic sense, just go for it. Do it because you have a need to do it. After that, turning it into a business, well, that's it's hard, you know, it's really hard. And it's hard to be out there making a living doing it because there's a lot of sacrifices that have to be made. I mean, I left home more than 20 years ago. I haven't seen my parents in 2 years. Good thing we got technology. We Skype like we're doing right now. I actually Skyped them earlier today. So even though we're far in distance, we can see still each other. But I left everything behind. You just, your last question about my friends, what they think about what I'm doing. But it's kind of like that. For years, I didn't talk to anybody. So I left friends and family behind, everything I knew. Now, my case is a little extreme just because I come from a far away land. But yeah. Here, it's kind of the same thing. You will miss out on relationships. You know, relationships are hard when you're a musician because you have to go on the road. You will miss out on birthdays. You will miss out maybe even on holidays sometimes. I mean, I'm looking at spending Christmas not at home for the second year. Not at home, I mean, my parents' home. Home is here, but so you I think what really happens is as you put your feet in the water and you just realize if you're fit for it or not. Because I've known musicians 10 years ago, I knew musicians that 10 years later they've done something else because like I still love music, I will always play music. I got a music room in my house, but I got a job because you know I started a family. My girlfriend, we ended up getting married and having a kid, and I didn't want to be away from the kids. Now there's only crazy people like me that like, well, if I were to have a kid, I'd still go on the road, you know? And so it's one of those things. I think you gotta differentiate what you think you should be doing and what you're supposed to do. Now, the only way to find out is to go out and do it because people say, well, man, you know, I can write some song. I wish I could be, so-and-so, I wish I could have a number one. It's like, that's not how that works. That's just not how that works. Like, if you were to ask me where I see myself in 5 years with music, I don't know and I don't care. I'm going to do what I do right now. I'm looking at 15 shows, 16 shows in December, talking to you, like, this is a cool thing, and let people know what I do. But I'm not seeing myself. I'm not going to say, okay, if in 5 years I don't have a number one, I'm going to quit music. No, it doesn't matter. I'd be more like those old blues guys that are in Bentonia that worked the entire life and still play music better than most people that try to do it professionally. I'm just lucky enough to play good enough on guitar that I can be a sideman and have the time on the side to do my music and eventually, you know, see what's got most demand. So I say for people that are starting out music is just do it for fun. Don't think about trying to be famous. I think social media is great because you know, you can have a little page and you can post music videos, you sing in or whatever. I think it's great, you know. I got into TikTok. I never thought I would. I love it. I post guitar videos. Even when I hear, you know, I just love it. And people, I meet new people that are like, this is great. And I have pertinent comments about like a guitar lick I will do or a song that I wrote that I'm singing. It's just, you got to do it for fun. Money, figure it out later. Yeah. It's not the most important thing, I think.
Right on. You know, it's a quote that I've been running through my head all this week, and I believe it runs in the right what you're saying. is the thing that you want most is commonly in a place you don't want to look. Like, you know, you went back to King, when you go back to King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, when they were looking for the Holy Grail, you know what their strategy was when they left the Round Table?
No.
Let's go to the forest. And Frenchie, I want you to walk into the darkest place to you and search. And I'll go into the darkest place that scares me the most and search there. And so, like, with this, what you want out of life, and you hit it so well, and, like, a lot of it is distraction, and a lot of it is life, but, man, you know, I play guitar, and I'll go to a singer-songwriter night, and I'll play at my buddy's bar, and, like, I have this podcast, and I'm just trying to get the word out about people that I respect in music.
Yeah.
And I'm just doing everything that I can for the community. And, like, I'm crossing all my T's and dotting my I's. And that's all I want. And I'm having a great time doing it.
Yeah, it looks
so,
like it.
Like,
yeah,
in my mind, it's successful.
Yeah.
And so, like, when people, it's almost like jumping into something with the wrong intent, right? It's like, I'm going to be a hit star. Probably not.
Most likely not.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that people that are in the business that are looking for the stars, they'll know. So if you're a star, you don't have to look for it. Do what you love. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's maybe not that easy, but the big part of it, I think, is that, I mean, tomorrow I'm playing a brewery, right? I love it. It's not because I played in front of 17,000 people with Ingram. I'm going to say, well, if I'm not playing for 17,000 people, I'm not going to play at all. I don't care. Like, I played sold-out theaters with Jack Acoustic last weekend, and then this weekend I'm going to do my own little shows in breweries and stuff, and then I got a couple of brunch shows this weekend of solo acoustic. I'm excited about it. I cannot wait. And, you know, I promote it because I'm not ashamed of it, because some people say, well, I don't want to show unless it's, you know, big. But it's just like, no, you know, you live now. You don't live 5 years from now. Just don't. Especially now that I'm in my early 40s, you know, just do what you're doing. You're doing it. This is what the reality of your life is. And if you don't like it, then do something else. But if you do appreciate like I do, and be thankful that, you know, place like Texas, you know, we you know, places open. You can go out. People are going out. People want to hear music. And there's 30-something breweries around the DFW area, or more, I think. And they all have music pretty much every day of the week. Like, if you want to play, you can play. You know, you can literally play. Like I said, I played 7 shows last week. Now, if Nashville calls one day and someone heard
me. I was following the coverage, and I was like, my man Frenchie is getting after it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and it's great. I love it. I'm not burning out, so I'm going to do it till my entire beard and hair is gray and, you know, and the scars from the road and... So it's fantastic, you know.
It's been a life worth living, right?
Oh yeah, and I'm pretty healthy, so I'm looking at, you know, another 2 decades at least, if not more, of doing it, you know, like I have, and I think it's fantastic.
Right on. All right, question number 2 is it's a bit of your welcome. Is what has been your favorite part of the interview? To put you on the spot.
The favorite part of the interview?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been the whole entire interview has been great. I think probably...
Yeah, I've had a great time.
Well, I think probably surprising me about Mississippi and knowing Dee Carp and heard about the Shakopin. And did you have a story about the Shakopin?
No, like, not a personal story. It's just like I have a whole collection of stories. It's like I have a friend. He'll be playing your music on... he's got a station from 9 to 12 out of Tuscaloosa. It's called Indies Only.
Okay.
And
all
so
right.
Monk is really into the blues. And so like he has all these stories from staying at the Shack Up Inn. And I was like, I've got to do that myself. And
that's
then, you know,
awesome.
You just continue meeting people and it was like Shack Up Inn, you know, and it's just like,
yeah.
I've got just a little storybook of these collection of stories. Like what happened to you is, it's just a really cool experience that happened.
Yeah. Well, it's a thing, yeah, because Clarksdale is the place. Yeah, it's a magical place, really, if you know, if you can. Anybody, even if you're not a blues lover, but you love music in general, this is one of the places to go. So that was definitely the surprising part of the interview, because we hadn't really talked before the podcast about anything. And so when I threw that in there, it's just like, oh, cool, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, right on. Number three is for the audience is plugs on social media and anyone in the Texas area or wherever you'll be for the rest of this month. And if you can call 2022, like January, where are you going to be playing? What are you going to be up to?
I don't need to pull up my dates because I don't even know.
Okay.
But people know. People can just go to my website is bluesdestroyers.com. And you got the dates there. They're all there. And the music is there too. And then all my social media is at Guitar Frenchie. And I do Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. So if they go to Instagram, I always post in advance for about the shows. And so I play when is the podcast coming out? So I can kind of, so I'm playing the 9th.
I could possibly get it out tomorrow. I don't know. Yeah. I was going to wait to get this audio and
figure it out.
Which audio I was going to use.
Yeah, the best thing for people if they're in the area is to go to bluesdestroyers.com. But it's basically all I've got is it's all Fort Worth and Dallas.
Okay.
So it's all. And I have a few dates for January, but they haven't been confirmed yet. So, but everything in December is confirmed so far. So,
well, man, sometime in the future, hopefully next year, maybe we'll be shaking hands and maybe we're at Bentonia or Clarksdale.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
Having ourselves a ball and a biscuit.
Maybe we should, exactly right. And then maybe we should just meet in Clarksdale or like in Mississippi in general. That'd be a great place to fucking go see music and do all that. So,
right on. Well, Kevin, or Frenchie, man, thank you so much, man. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. You're welcome back anytime. I can't wait to listen back. I've had a blast.
I did too. Well, that was great. All right.
All right, man.
Bye. See you soon.
Peace out.
Bye. See ya.
News and notes. Thank you so much for listening to Porch Talk. If you haven't done so already, give that 5-star review to the podcast app that you listen to Porch Talk on. Share it on your social media with your coworker, with your friends and family. I firmly believe in the work that we're doing here to put a spotlight on real music. And you're well aware of all the other things that we do here. I want to give a shout out to our sponsors at Munson & Brothers. If you go to MunsonandBrothers.com, it's the holiday season. You can get you some Munson & Brothers goodies. Order online at MunsonandBrothers.com, and when you go to check out, use the promo code PORCHTALK. All one word, all caps. PORCHTALK. All one word, all caps. You'll get a little discount from me. And so that helps me, helps you, helps Monson. It's a win-win-win. And how often do you get to do that? I would invite you to go to bluesdestroyers.com if you want more from Frenchie. Support his music. Support what he's doing. And a little birdie told me that he will be returning sometime soon. So if you like this, we're getting an upgrade on the internet here at the house. And so I'm going to be moving the show more toward video. I'm excited about that. That is all I have for you. Storefrontier.com /porch talk. If you want to support the show by getting some merchandise, you can do that. Here is Guitar Frenchie and the Blues Destroyers with a song called Miss Me. I'm out of here, guys. Peace out.
back and walked away. Miss me when I'm gone, tears and trouble around again. Miss me when I'm gone, you better step in and try again, yeah. Don't care for me. The other man is out there waiting. You're giving up, it's killing me. For better or worse, you leave me out here shaking. Truth be told, I'm going crazy. You're never the one, but you love is empty. But you're the one that I'm contemplating. Miss me when I'm gone, tears and trouble around again. Miss me when I'm gone, you better step in and try again. You better step in and try again. You better step in and try again. You better step in and try again.